Board Game Bros. Hello, listeners.
Hey, everyone.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games. And it's another regularly scheduled weekly episode where we're going to pick a board game. We're going to talk about how to play it. We're going to talk about the strategies involved in the game. And we're going to talk about how it was designed. So, Matthew, what game are we talking about today?
We are talking about Power Grid, designed by Friedman Fries. Published in 2004 by 2F Spiel, but I think it was Rio Grande was the American publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And then, interestingly, Board Game Geek has this listed as having won the 2005 Spiel des Jahres recommended category, which was the precursor to Kenner Spiel. But Wikipedia does not list this. I would err with Board Game Geek, though.
Yeah. Okay. Power Grid. So just to give a short description of Power Grid. In Power Grid, players manage an electrical grid spanning cities in either Europe or North America. Each round, players bid on power plants, buy fuel from the market to power their plant, and construct buildings in their cities in cities for their grid. At the end of each round, players pay fuel to generate power at their plants, which powers their buildings and earns them money for the next round. The game takes place over three steps, each step determining how many different players can have buildings in a city. At the end of the round in the third step, when a player builds their 17th building, the player with the most powered buildings wins. So that's the short of it.
Right.
There's a map with cities, you build buildings, you buy power plants, you buy fuel, and you fuel the plants to power the cities to earn money so that you can do it more next round. That's the short description of Power Grid. So let's get a little more detailed into how to play the game and the strategy in the game.
Right.
So let's just go over a turn, because I think that'll best describe all the different elements
of this game. A round?
A round.
Yeah.
Okay, so in a round, so you start with the – well, first you just start by determining how the order of the players, because the order of the players is very important in this game, and it does not go clockwise always. So this is determined by whoever has the most cities, and then after that, whoever has the most expensive, or rather the power plant with the highest number on it, which also is sort of its cost.
Yeah.
That determines who goes first, and they will go first, and then the person in second will go second, and the person third, and so on, for the first part of the turn. But then for the second and third parts of the turn, they will go reverse order. So first you determine this order. Then in the first part of the turn, you auction power plants, or you bid on power plants that are being auctioned.
Right. So I want to bring up something really quick, which is there are three steps in this game. And each step has very, very, very slight rules changes. And that is important to know for the context of some of the turn stuff.
Right.
So, like, when you're auctioning, for step one and two, there are four power plants that you can choose to start an auction with.
And there are four others that are on deck ready to replace them. This is kind of like a trade row, but it's more like an auction row in this game.
Yeah. And
Starting with the player who's in first, they select one of these power plants, and each power plant has a number associated with it. They start at 3, and they go up to 50. So the number on the plant is the minimum bid that you have to make in order to buy this plant. So the person going first selects a power plant, selects how much they want to bid on it. Usually it's the cost of the power plant. And then going clockwise from them during this part of the turn, everybody else can increase that bid until only one person remains in the bidding process. Excuse me. And that person has to pay that much money to acquire that power plant. A player can only have three power plants at any given time. So if they acquire a fourth power plant, then they have to get rid of one of the power plants that they already had and replace it with the new one.
Right.
So this goes player by player. Now, if the player going first ends up buying the power plant, then the second auction is started by the player going second. However, if the player going first starts a bid on a power plant and somebody else buys it, then the player going first starts the next bid as well.
Right.
Until either they purchase a power plant and it passes to the second player or the third player or whatever, or until everyone has either purchased a power plant, or it is also an option for a player to pass when it is their turn to select a power plant to put up for auction.
Right, and that means that you can't bid on anything for the rest of the auction.
Right, it means they cannot acquire a power plant. Now, you can't, on the first turn, you have to buy a power plant. That's a rule, but on any subsequent turn, buying a power plant from the auction is optional.
Yep.
So after this phase is done, and every player has either bought in one power plant or passed on the opportunity, then you go into the market phase. And this is where the players will purchase fuel that will be fed into their power plants to power their cities. So the different kinds of fuel are coal, oil, trash, and uranium.
Right.
And on the board, there is a row where these or a tracker of sorts where these resources are kept in different slots. And at the beginning of the game, they're filled in a certain way. And at the end of every round, they're refilled in a certain way, depending on the number of players and what step you're in the game. Excuse me. And the short of it is that at the low end of the tracker, the resources cost less. At the high end of the tracker, the resources cost more. You purchase from the low end, and what that will do is it will remove parts. It will remove that resource from the tracker so that the only available resource will be more expensive. And then when you refill these trackers, it starts at the high end and it fills out towards the low end. So depending on how much is bought, to describe it, at the very low end, every resource will just cost $1 in this game. At the high end, their uranium can cost, I think the highest is $18. It's like $16 or $18. But the other resources could cost up to $10 each for just one resource, depending on if resources are scarce in this game. So in this phase, the turn order is reversed. So the person in last gets to buy the first resource. They could buy as much as they can hold in their power plants, which now we should probably describe what the power plant cards look like.
Right. So they each have a number, as mentioned before, from, what is it, 3 to 50?
3 to 50, yeah.
And each power plant has a artwork, of course, showing what it is, but on the bottom, it shows a resource in a different quantity, usually from 1 to 3, and mm-hmm. then a arrow, and then a house with a number on it. And this means that you spend the resource on the left to power as many houses as shown on the right.
So, for example, it could have, like, two trash powers three houses.
Exactly.
So what that means is that if you spend three trash at the end of the turn, you can power up to three houses with that power plant. It also means that this one power plant can store on its card up to six trash, which is essentially just double – or, sorry, it can store up to – what did I say? Two trash, three houses?
Yeah.
It can store up to four trash. Because the amount of resources that any given power plant can store is double the amount that it takes to power it, to fuel it. So when you're buying fuel in this phase of the game, you can only buy as much as you can carry, which is determined by how much you need to power your plants.
Right.
It's double that much. And you keep them in the specific plant. So if you have a coal plant and you have a trash plant, you can buy coal and put it in the coal plant. You can't keep some of that coal in the trash plant for some reason.
Right. And if you replace a power plant that has resources on it, if mm-hmm. there is another plant that can hold it, so like if you have another coal plant or you're building another coal plant, mm-hmm. you can move the resources there. However, if you don't have another plant that can hold those resources, they just go away.
Right. Essentially, you can move your resources around between your different plants as long as they can take that resource and they have the space for them. You can do that anytime you want during the game. Right. But yeah, if you ever run out of space because you replace a plant and you no longer have a plant that can hold that much of a resource, or you no longer have a plant that can hold any of that resource, then your resources are lost. Yep. They go to the supply, which will later refill into the market.
Yep.
So after that, you go into the construction phase, which is where you build buildings in cities. So on the first turn, nobody will have any buildings in any cities. And in the first part of the game, you're in step one, which means that only one building can be built in any given city.
Right.
The cost of building a building in a city, the first building, is $10. So essentially in the first building phase, everyone will just pick a city and pay $10 to put their first building in there. And then every subsequent building phase after that, what you're doing is you're expanding your grid or your network of buildings. Yeah. And what that means is that you have to pay the $10 cost for building a building in a city. And you will also have to pay connecting costs, because in between the cities, there are these connecting lines, and each line has a different cost. And you have to pay that connection cost in addition to the construction cost for the city to build a building in a new city after you have built your first building. And those connection costs can go from zero in the case of some buildings on like the East Coast, which or some cities on the East Coast, which are so close together, there's no connecting cost, versus like 28, which is out in the Southwest where cities are very far apart.
Right. And it should be noted that as the game goes on, in step two, up to two buildings can be built on a given city, mm-hmm. but you cannot put more than one of your own building on a city. So each player can only have at most one on a city. And then step three, there can be three total buildings on a city.
Oh, it should be said, by the way, that we played this game on the U.S. map side.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And yeah, this game, it comes with a double-sided board. One side is part of Europe, and the other side is the U.S. I think right. It's specifically, what is this in Europe? Looks like Germany.
That would make sense.
Yeah, I think it's just just Germany, but it's really long.
Okay. Well. Okay. So all of our opinions and knowledge about this comes from the U.S. side.
Yeah.
For reference.
Okay. And
anything we say about like East Coast, West Coast, that's all U.S.
Okay.
So in step two and three, you can have two and three buildings on a city respectively, but not more than one of your own building. And additionally, the second building has a base cost of $15 plus the connecting fees like normal. And then the mm-hmm. third building has a base cost of $20. Plus the connecting fees like normal. Right.
So you build buildings, and then after that phase, then it is the power and restock phase, where you pay the resources from your power plants to power up a number of your buildings. And how many buildings you power will determine how much money you get. And the gist of it that is that if you power zero buildings, you will get $10 at the end of the round. And then every building you power in addition to that will add another $11 or $12 on top of that.
Right. Until like around the 6 or 7 number mark, where mm-hmm. it starts to add a lesser amount each increment, like 8 and then 7.
Right.
Yeah.
So at the start, you'll earn more money per building that you add than the last building up to a point, and then it tapers out.
Right.
You get your money, you restock the market that has all the resources in it. Depending on how many players there are and what step you are, will determine how many of each resource gets restocked. And then you take out the highest cost factory from the market of factories. I guess is what it's called. And it's wherever it is. Oh, and it should be said that the market is always organized from highest to lowest. Lowest to highest. Yes. And the four lowest cost factories in steps one and two are the only ones that you can auction. Like we mentioned, you can only auction from a set of four. There's four others that are visible that are in like the future market.
Right.
That will come up and replace the other ones as they're bought in a way. Technically, they're not guaranteed to, because, for example, if there's like if the next lowest factory costs like 24 And the ones that are in the market currently are like 5, 6, 7, and 8. So say somebody buys 8, you draw a new market before you replace its space. And if you draw something that's lower than 24, that will go into the market that is available for purchase because it's one of the 4 lowest cost factories. So at the end of the turn or round, you take out the highest cost factory from this market and you tuck it under the deck of factories and you replace it with another one to start the next round.
Yeah. There's a few things to note real quick about this whole process is that we didn't mention the changes that happen in step 3 to these.
Right.
So in step,
did you say when step 2 is triggered?
So step 2 happens when a player builds their 7th building and it's at the end of that round, right?
Yeah.
Step 3 happens, there's a special step 3 card that is put in the power plant deck.
It starts at the bottom.
Right.
And then cards will be tucked under it in that process that we just described.
Right.
So it'll be somewhere towards the bottom.
And when that card is drawn, step 3 starts. And in step 3, two of the main changes are that instead of having 4 power plants to purchase and 4 in the future market, there are always 6 power plants purchasable, and that's it. So, like, after you, there's 6 that you can choose from. After one's removed, you immediately flip over the top card of the deck and put it right with those 6 to be bought. Additionally, at the end of a round, instead of removing the highest numbered power plant, you remove the lowest numbered power plant from the game and put it into the box.
Right.
So it cycles out all the low ones and only gets the high ones late in the game.
Okay. So that's the basics of how to play this game, I think. That's pretty much everything
I think you should know. Yeah.
I guess the one little thing that you should probably also know is that if you're the last person during the auctioning of the power plants phase to purchase a power plant, then you only have to pay for the minimum cost since nobody can bid since they've already bought or passed on buying power plants.
Right.
Okay, strategy.
Oh, wait, we should mention one thing really quick, which is that when you're playing the game, you choose a number of regions on the board based on the player count to actually play the game in, right?
Right, you're right. Yeah. So if you don't have the max number of players, then you're not going to use the whole board in a playthrough.
For reference,
There's 6 areas on the board to choose from, and this can be up to a 6-player game. We played with 4 players.
Right.
We only use 4 areas.
Yeah, we did not use the Northwest and Southwest.
Right. And that'll probably go into the strategy portion first. This isn't really a strategy for how to win, but more like a strategy for how to play the game and probably enjoy it. Because the West part of the board has very high costs for connecting to cities. So I guess if you wanted to play a slower, more grindy game, then pick the areas that are on the western portion of the board in the U.S. map. And if you wanted to play a more fast pace, fast expansion type of game, then you would want the East Coast where all the connection costs are very cheap.
Right.
Yeah. So you start the game with $50 and you spend that money on 3 different things every turn. You spend it on auctioning or bidding on a power plant, you spend it on buying resources from the market, and you spend it on building buildings. And my first strategy tip for this game is that this game is all about budgeting. And what that means is that when you are starting a round, you need to first look at where you plan on building a building. And then you need to look at what types of resources you'll probably be using to power your plants to power that building. So you can look at the power plants you have and the power plants that are available and what you might be purchasing. And then you can examine the market. So you can get an idea of how much you're going to pay for your building. You can get an idea for how much you're going to pay for resources. And then that will tell you how much money you have to spend on the auctioning of the power plants.
Right. Yeah.
So the, So you don't have to do this every turn. I think for the earlier turns, you have a little more money, a little more flexibility to spend it. So you don't necessarily have to do that. You could just kind of use a rule of thumb for the auction process, which is like you probably don't want to spend more than five extra dollars on any given power plant. But then later on in the game, when it comes down to it, because the difference in who the winner is it's like at the end of the game, when somebody builds their 17th city, the winner is the person who powers the most buildings. But if there's a tie, it's the person with the most money. So budgeting becomes very important later on for that purpose, also for the purpose of just being efficient and building as fast as you can and getting as much money as you can.
Right.
So you should budget definitely later on in the game. And by budgeting, that means looking at getting an idea for how much you're going to spend for your house and for your resources, and then using what's left over to get the factory that you want.
Right. Yeah. And in that regard, one important thing is to get to the ability to power 17 houses relatively quickly.
Well, I mean, 17 houses is the end of the game.
Right. But
you're just saying you want to be the one to trigger the end game.
Well, so more like if you get those factories around like early mid game, mm-hmm. like the early part of the mid game, then you don't have to worry about buying factories for the rest of the game. You can allocate all of your funds to resources, to fuel stuff, and to build houses.
So you're saying it's better to spend your money on those factories if they are high cost or high production, high output factories.
Yeah, like don't shy away from the high output factories, because it's either like you buy a 40 cost factory that powers six buildings or something, or even mm-hmm. five, or you buy a 20 cost factory that powers three that you then get rid of before the end of the game. And that would be more like wasting $20 outright.
Well,
I mean, obviously it goes with your whole budgeting thing, but
I mean, you need to be powering buildings. And if you spend $20 is the difference for building another building, or yeah, it's the difference between building a building or not.
Right.
And I mean, you need to spend money to make money in this game. See, I don't know if this strategy is legitimate, because sure. I don't think anybody tried it when we played. Sure.
I mean, I lost the game that we played, so maybe I'm not the best, but this is just like, I think, sort of a key thing to, because like powering buildings gives you money, but mm-hmm. also just like it felt like I was losing a lot of money by buying factories I didn't keep, even if in the short term it helped.
I finished second place, and I at one point bought a factory that downgraded my capabilities.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it lowered me to it. It may have actually only powered like one less building than I actually had available to me. So if I hadn't bought it, I would have been able to power all of my buildings. But instead, I bought this factory because it I was using factories that were fueled by trash, and nobody else had those factories. So the resource was never contested. It was always
right. That's
cheap for me.
Yeah. That's and what I was going to say is, getting uncontested resources is pretty important.
Well, so what I was saying is that I bought a cheap factory that downgraded my power capabilities because it was a cheap trash factory and I didn't want anybody else to have it.
Sure.
And the rules of the game forced me to keep it. I couldn't buy a factory and then pitch it. I had to keep it and replace something else with it.
Right.
So I did. And it ended up being – I mean, I ended up finishing second place. I was able to power 17 buildings, but I didn't have the most money.
Right.
But I think that definitely helped just to keep other people out of my trash domain.
Okay, then let me put this in a different way.
Okay.
What if the real thing then is that you want to break supply parity? So like if everybody's buying the same power value of houses, so like everybody buys a powering one house, you know, round one, round two, they buy a plant that powers two houses. Mm-hmm. If you were to buy a plant that powers two houses round one, then you can be a bit more open with your budget, because you might not have to buy a power plant round two to facilitate powering all the houses you want.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it like giving yourself some room and having like a turn where you're not going to have to spend everything or spend money on every phase of the game.
Yeah.
Is kind of what we're saying here. You kind of get a turn to rest with one of these expenditures because you made a slightly higher investment. Because, I mean, it's like the higher investment, two power plants is two power plants. If you can buy one power plant that can do the same thing as two power plants, you likely aren't paying double the cost of, you know, a power plant. You're probably paying just a little bit more than the regular cost of a power plant. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
At any given point in the game, the power plants all cost relatively the same. Mm-hmm. So buying one power plant that does essentially the same thing as two power plants is a good deal.
Right, yeah.
So doing that, paying the little bit extra on one turn is a good thing, just because the next turn you might not have to buy a power plant, which means that you can save your money, or it means that you can spend your money on expanding other parts of your strategy.
Honestly, you can think of it in the typical extra turn rule, that if mm-hmm. you don't spend money on one of the three phases where you spend money, it means like you're getting a third of a turn for free.
Sure.
Almost.
Now, I want to say that as you're playing this game, you want to try to manage your score up until the end so that you are always in around last place.
Yeah.
I mean, last place being in the turn order, which is determined by the number of houses you have and the number values on your factory. Right. Factories. It's just one factory. Your highest factory is the one that gets checked. So managing that is kind of important in the mid game, because being able to buy the resources for very cheap and build the buildings where you want to build them is very important, especially the building portion.
Right. Yeah. Our mom always went first in auction for like the first half of the game.
Right, because she had the most buildings, like, for the most of the first half of the game.
Right, but then...
And she had a very high-cost factory at right. some points.
But pretty quickly, because she wasn't... Because she was, like, last to build buildings, she actually got kind of cornered in one of the areas in the map. She couldn't expand any further until step two.
Because there could only be one building in any of the cities, and you and our dad had bought... buildings in cities, or built buildings in cities surrounding the territories that she was growing in. She had to now you don't have to build in adjacent cities. You can build multiple cities away from where your factories are, but that just means that you have to pay the connection costs for all of the different connections that connect your city to the city across the map. And that's what our mom ended up having to do, is because she didn't have any room where she was in the Northeast. She had to buy or build a building in a city in Florida and paid like twice as much to build it there, just so that she could connect it all the way back up to the Northeast.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned having a monopoly on resources, but I think in this game you can really only have a monopoly on trash or uranium.
Yeah,
because there's just so many buildings, so many factories, power plants that take coal and oil.
Sure,
like everyone's gonna pretty much have one of those. It's hard to like corner that market, but it's not hard to corner trash or uranium. Well, and go ahead.
I was gonna say, end game, when everybody's getting houses to keep or getting power plants that they're gonna keep, mm-hmm. then you can be like, all right, two people have. You know, coal power plants that power six houses. So I should probably not get a coal one.
Mm-hmm.
That's more of what I mean in the end game.
Gotcha. Now, there's some power plants that don't take any fuel. They just power houses for free.
Right. They're green energy.
They're green energy. And these power plants, now, our dad won. And I think because for most of the game, he was... able to just run off of these types of power plants.
He had three at one point.
At one point, yes. At one point, he was not buying any resources. And that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
Because the resources can add up over time. You know, you spend $8 on resources one turn, and then the next turn, maybe you'll spend $11 because you have to buy all these different kinds of resources to power your power plants. And if you have these green power plants that don't take resources, you can pay, you know, $8 more, $11 more for these things, which is a lot. You wouldn't pay that much more for any other power plant in this game, but you can with these because you're not going to have to buy any resources for them.
Right.
I wouldn't encourage you to do so. Try to buy these, you know, for around $6 more than they're worth, if you can, just because that's how you're going to really make money on them. And right, then keep them around as long as you can, too. Like, if you're replacing one of your power plants, if, like, your green power plant powers two cities and you've got another power plant that takes coal that powers four and you're buying a power plant that powers five, consider replacing the four.
Yeah.
And keep that green one around a little longer. That generates value for you. Okay. Let's see. So when you are entering step three... When you're entering step two and step three, it's important that it's the most important that you're in last place, because when these steps start, you can start to build houses. You can start to build second and third houses in different cities. And so it's like a good turn, I think, in this game is saving your money right before step two starts. And then spending all your money to expand into these new second city areas for the lowest prices.
Right, yeah. The ones that were previously unreachable.
Right. Sort of this rapid expansion into for good value, like especially into like the East Coast.
Right, yeah.
Same thing for the third step.
Yeah. I don't really have much else strategy-wise.
Let's see. Budget always. Try to start in a place where you don't think you'll get cut off by other players.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's all I really have for strategy. So let's talk about how the game is designed.
All right. Oh boy.
So I see this game in, there's two layers of design that are happening. There is like how the game is played and its mechanics and stuff. And then there's how a player can influence how the game is played.
Yeah.
Oh, and speaking of which, that actually takes me back to one last strategy point, and that is how to game the auction.
Oh, yeah.
If you're first, the way that it sounds, the way that the rules are presented to you, it sounds like you're going to have to pay more for the factory that you want because other people are going to be bidding on it. But if you just auction factories that other players want and force them to bid on it and make them pay more, and you can guess that for each other player, then you can buy the factory you want at cost.
Yeah.
By just like forcing other people to bid on a factory and then allowing them to buy it by just dropping out of that bid.
Right.
Okay. And that's an example of how this game has two layers of design, because the game's rules make it sound like you auction. I mean, they don't say that you have to auction the factory that you want, but that's kind of what you imply, is that like, I choose this factory because I want this factory. But that's not the case. You don't have to do that. Right. And that's kind of a thing that exists in like all phases of this game.
Yeah, for sure. Like,
like the turn order. Like you can choose. The game sounds like it's saying you should buy buildings, and because buildings will eventually mean that you win. But in some cases, it's better to not build buildings and have fewer than your opponents, just because that means you're going to be going first in the building and their resource buying phases of the next turn.
Yeah, it's an interesting dichotomy for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or like, I guess you could say that with the price of resources as well, that like the ones in greater quantities that are cheaper, like it might look like those are the more valuable ones, but at sometimes maybe just buying a few solid higher cost ones ends up being the same or less money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I feel about all that, honestly, though. I think it's cool that the game gives you freedom to use the mechanics. Like, that's something I appreciate in a game. But so, at the same time, it basically kind of tells you to do something and then, like, rewards you for doing the opposite.
Well, it's what this is this is depth in the strategy of the game.
Right, yeah.
It's a ton of depth.
Yeah.
It's so much depth that, I mean, this is part of the game. Like, this this is something that people will eventually recognize after playing this game enough times.
Sure.
Is that like you can manipulate the game itself and like the rules of the game.
I guess that's fair.
this kind of depth is hard to reach. And it's not really hinted at anywhere in the rule book at all. No, I think nothing in this game really hints about this depth.
Yeah.
And so it's really hidden. And so this game, I could see why it won Kennerspiel, or the precursor to Kennerspiel, because you have to be like a real gamer, You have to be a Spike.
Yeah.
You have to be a Spike in order to seek this kind of thing out and then derive joy from it. If you're just somebody who likes to, you know, play along with the narrative that the game is presenting you, this game is not so interesting.
Right. Yeah. And I think a lot of games nowadays, they'll at least hint at like possible ways you can abuse mechanics, or
right,
like ways if, you can go around it.
If this game were to do that, they would say something like the person, they'd start to describe the second part of the game where you're buying resources, and they'd say like the person in last gets to go first here. Maybe consider building less buildings or something like that.
Or even like, so Seven Wonders, for example, it kind of keys you in on hate drafting by saying you can draft a card just to sell it for money. I hope you don't want that card.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it invites the player to think about what the rule means and then make a conclusion about it that is about the depth of the game. But this doesn't really have that.
No. And personally, I have like maybe a little ounce of Spike in me. So I found it kind of cool when I realized this about the game, that like you don't have to play by the rules of the game. You get to sort of make up your own like priorities
for
how you will win.
I think that's cool. If anything, it reminds me of like gambling manga, like Kaiji, where where the author intentionally makes a game where the rules can be circumvented in a weird way for like dramatic effect or plot twists. But in this case, it's just for the game's design. It's a bit of a weird thing. But yeah, it's different for sure.
I mean, it's a game with a metagame built into it.
Right.
And or not a metagame as in like the one translation of what a metagame is, but like it's a game with a corruptible system built into it.
Right, yeah. And I think part of that's just that like auctions, for example, are really inherently deep concepts. I think the fact that you can aggressively choose things for auction is really interesting, and I haven't seen a whole lot of games that do that nowadays. And it should be mentioned, this is like a 15-year-old game, in case you missed that part at the start.
Yeah, this game is a little old. And I guess, just the auction mechanic itself has this level of depth to it that we're describing here. But then it's just like compounded on with the turn order mechanic in this game. That's also this thing that you can manipulate if you're clever.
I think the turn order is one of the better mechanics in this game also, because it's fairly organic as far as like how you calculate it and then what that means in the overall scheme of things. Like the higher cost power plants mean that they spent more money, but it also means they have better power plants. So the people who have lower numbers who go last in auction order then get to spend more money on buildings first. So they have first come, first serve, but then they have more buildings than the people who got the power plants. So it kind of reverses, ideally.
Yeah, it kind of flows and ebbs and flows naturally, because since things are cheaper for you, you will buy more of them, and then that will take you ahead of the other players who had to pay more.
Right, yeah.
Over time.
And same thing with the resource costs. I think this is one of the best parts of the game's design as well, is how organically the supply and demand balances out.
Yeah, I think this is a very clever and successful implementation of a supply and demand mechanic. That just there's these slots that the resources go into, and as they are bought away from these slots, they enter into higher cost brackets or whatever. The way I described it just now is way more complicated than it actually is.
Right, yeah.
You're just filling in a board and you're buying them off the board, and where you buy them from on the board tells you how much you have to spend for it.
Right. And like the fact that
it's very elegant and it's very easy to grasp.
Yeah, and the fact that they start filling out from like turn one, even the expensive stuff like uranium and trash, I think helps sort of add to this idea that like it is really fluctuating, but also, you know, it's kind of constantly in your face, like, hey, these are options you can buy. Mm-hmm. Like you have to pick up the piece of trash and put it on the tracker.
One thing about this game that this game does that no other game does is it has very important tables on the back of its rule book that you have to reference at the end of every turn. This is unfortunate.
Like a bygone concept.
Yeah. So the table is what you reference at the end of a round to resupply the market of fuel. And it's unfortunate that you have to keep the rule book around for so long. Although, honestly, I don't know why that feels like a bad thing. Like,
so
if it were printed on a piece of cardboard, would I like it more?
So I think a few things. One thing, the rule book is bigger than a piece of cardboard. So it's not even on the board, like slightly above where the market would be. It's kind of off to the side, and it takes up all this table space just to have this thing you reference. But this might sound weird because of what the game is otherwise, but it breaks immersion. Like, if you think of, like, the magic circle, you know, like, when you're sitting down to play a game, sort of all your attention goes to the game, and you kind of lose track of everywhere else around you. You know, you're on looking at the board and stuff, but, you know, this breaks your attention away from the board to look at a bunch of words on a book.
I know, but, I mean, what else are we doing playing a game other than looking at a bunch of words or symbols?
I know, this is why I prefaced that point, but that's sort of what it felt to me.
It's like, first of all, it's like the rule book of a game inherently just has this stigma to it. That when you read this thing, it's like, it's not going to be fun because this isn't the game. This is telling you how to play the game. This is your teacher.
Right, but it's necessary giving you an assignment.
You know, doing the assignment might be fun. It might be like, you know, making a cool art project or something. But this is your teacher, like, giving you the PowerPoint presentation of how to do that.
Right. It's the line for the roller coaster.
It's the line for the roller coaster with the instructional videos on how to handle the latch bar or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So having to just pull out this book, I mean, it's literal bookkeeping, I guess. Maybe this is just to say, like, no, people don't really like referencing rule books during a game. Sometimes they'll have to, and sometimes you'll just have a complicated game, and that's inevitable. But I guess when you're designing a game, you want to keep these kind of bookkeeping elements either in some kind of intuitive mechanic so that, like, you don't have to say, okay, we're having four players and we're in step two, so this is the process we have to go through. But rather, like, it's something more intuitive, like, this is what happened in the game, so now this is what you do.
Or
you put it on the game elements like cards and boards.
I think I'm surprised there wasn't just one on top of the market, because you're already looking at the market to see, you know, if you filled it in or not. That kind of be natural. Also,
I mean, the table on the back of the book is way too big. Like, it's in like 64 point font, all the numbers and stuff. They could have definitely shrunk that down to be the size of the market on the board.
This was actually
totally legible.
So the fact also that there are some weird rules for when step three happens based on different timings, they could have totally just made another rules card where one side is the restock number and the other side is more detail about the steps.
They could have put it on the card that they put in the factory deck to signify that step three is starting.
Right. I'm just saying this would have fixed both things.
So what we're saying is, I think what we're saying in this design discussion here is that when you're putting rules that are meant to be referenced during the game into your game, put them on game elements so that you don't take people out of the game and back into a rule book.
Unless you take like a ton of work to change the player's perception on the rule book,
Right. Like as betrayal. Exampled in like Betrayal. Yeah, exactly.
Or even like legacy games where from the very start of the game, usually you learn that the rule book is a game component.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of setting the stage that the rule book isn't just a rule book. You know, it's not just an encyclopedia. That can help.
Right.
I want to talk about a concept I am coining now as we speak. I want to call it wide range syndrome.
Okay. So
this is a big problem I had with the game when we played it, was that there is a huge range of numbers from everything from like power plant costs to especially buildings and how much it costs to build cities. I think what I mean by wide range syndrome is that when you have a wide range of values for a given purpose, like how to build cities, then the difference between those values and the importance of each value is harder for the player to discern.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, there's a big difference between $10 and $20, for example. What's the difference between $13 and $16?
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of what I'm getting at, is this game has a big problem with that. Because, like, on the board, there's all these different numbers for the connection values. And it's easy to see, like, you know, okay, a free one is obviously very good. And, you know, $3 as a connection value is probably also pretty good. But is 16 that much worse than 15? Or likewise, right. Like, even though budgeting is good, it's like, what's the difference between bidding 5 over the cost of something versus 6 over the cost of something?
Right.
And I get that,
when there's so many of these little small decisions, like these decisions are small.
Yeah.
And like the amount that you're deciding over and its impact on your gameplay for the rest of the game. I mean, they could be small. They could also be very huge. Like in one turn, our dad was unable to build a building because he was literally $1 off.
But he ended up winning.
He ended up winning, yeah. But yeah. If that had happened to somebody who hadn't already kind of cemented a lead, it would have been a totally like different thing. It would have been bad. Yeah. So
I don't know why I lost per se, because I was able to power my 17 buildings. I just didn't end up with enough money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was only a little short behind Jeffrey. But it's hard for me to point out a single decision or round where like everything turned for me.
Sure.
Because
it could be those small decisions just added up over the game.
And I think I would assume the reason why there's like such a wide range of banknotes in general is because to facilitate auctions that like, mm-hmm. you know, ideally you would want your players to have as much flexibility with their bidding as possible. But in turn, it makes all the other stuff really like dense with a whole bunch of different numbers. Or like so we mentioned the payout for supplying buildings. Like eventually it gets to be like a $7 or $6 difference from one building to the next increment of buildings. Like, you know, whether you're powering 10 or 12 buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it hard for me to understand, like, wait, do I even want to power all these buildings? It's like there's a lot of extra math you have to do to figure out if the decision makes sense given the purpose. You mm-hmm. know, if that makes sense.
I can say that I think so towards the end of the game, I was just trying to plan my final turn, which was to buy 4 buildings and power all of them. Right. And so I wasn't even thinking about like, I was just thinking like, if I want to build 4 buildings next turn, then that means this is how much money I'm getting this turn. Is that enough? Yes. Okay. I'm good.
Right. It feels weird that like,
in the mid-game, I can see how this is, like, a harder decision to consider.
Right, but, like, it feels weird that in, like, the late game, if it's not the last turn or you don't think it's the last turn, it might not be worth it to power a building, even if you can, because you'd be spending more on the resource than it would give you in profits.
Right.
You know, like, the goal of the game is to power a building. It's called Power Grid, but
mm-hmm.
at some point it becomes less about powering a building now and more about banking your resources and money and leaving people in the dark.
And that's also another example of what we were talking about at the start of the design decision, design discussion, which is that this game presents the rules to you, but you don't have to follow them, and it's up to you to find out the depth beneath what the rules are telling you, and decide for yourself how you're going to interface with these rules in order to win the game.
Right. In that case, it's almost like ludonarrative dissonance, though, that the theme of the game is to power buildings and cities and, you know, establish a power grid. But part of the strategy might be to not power certain buildings for a round, which goes against the name of the game.
Sure.
I also want to bring up that the huge range of connection costs and the fact that, like, you can, you know, connect over longer distances by adding them together, and you can take the lowest possible number that you can if you draw out a path. It makes it really hard to plan that, like, perfect turn, so to speak. There's so many permutations to what you can spend. I think the problem is that, like, the game punishes you for not spending your money wisely. But in order to spend it on building things wisely, you have to, like, grab a calculator and make notes on a piece of paper. I forgot how much money I was planning to spend on a certain building a couple times.
Okay, so how about this? This game, so we talk about how the depth with the rules of this game is very appealing to a Spike. But this game has so much variance based on, you know, how much you end up paying for an auction, and what kind of connections you will have to make depending on where you are in the turn order and where other people build their buildings in this game, that the Spike who likes to plan for all these things and likes to limit variables and have things kind of precisely calculated is left wanting more with this game, or left frustrated with this game, because they can't precisely calculate how much money they're going to spend.
Right. But and
if they don't keep it very carefully in mind, the range of money that they have to spend, which is a wider range because of that syndrome that you mentioned earlier, then things could go wrong on accident. Like, and then that just feels bad.
Right. But for me, what I'm saying more is, like, that the money you spend on a given building, it's not that it's, like, variable. It's that there's so many different options, but there is only one optimal one still. That the Spike that wants to outplay the opponents knows that they have to find that optimal one, but doing so requires a lot of math. And if you miss that, it's not because variance wasn't on your side. It's because you missed the math there. You didn't see that it would work out a different way. And I don't know. I mean, like, obviously, if a Spike loses, the Spike wants to know how they lost and how they can improve. But if it's just not seeing a number on this huge web of numbers, it didn't make me feel good about losing. Like, I didn't feel like I could have found any other path given the circumstances. Had an hour to think about it.
So the range of options is just as wide as the range of of dollar cost that you could be paying for something.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think both of those problems would have been solved by, like, shortening your ranges, you know?
Yeah.
And but I think that the thing is that the range that exists in this game exists because of the factories, because there's 50 factories that go from 3 to 50, and no two factories have the same number. So that cost, I think the entire math of this game is probably just devised from this mechanic, because everything else seems like it's variable. There's you could change it if you wanted to. Like, you could change how much money you get from powering your 8th versus your 7th city. That's not based on anything. But the cost of the factories is based on the fact that there's 50 of them and they all have a different cost.
Yeah.
Well, or not 50, but there's 40. Yeah. So I guess if you had to fix, quote unquote, that aspect of this game, then you would have to start by limiting the range of the factories and having multiple factories that cost the same thing. Unfortunately, that breaks down the way that the market works in some cases. So
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe that's just an unfortunate part of this game that is just kind of like it's either impossible or just very difficult or complicated to work around.
It's a different. It's difficult to fix quickly.
Yeah.
It would take
a lot of thinking and planning and tinkering with this game's mechanics to just limit this one aspect of the game, which is the range of possibilities.
Exactly.
So maybe that's just something that you just have to keep in mind at the beginning of when you're designing a game, this range, so that you don't just design the whole game and get so many iterations into it and then realize that you're just dealing with this really wide range and there's so much to the game that you can't change, or that if you would change it, it would impact so much else in the game that it's too complicated. So, food for thought.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about design-wise?
Oh, one quick thing. This might be more of a personal peeve, but I think handling larger amounts of money can be fun, but not if you constantly have to exchange banknotes.
Yeah, there's like, not a lot of ones in this game, and there's not a lot of fives, so you have to constantly be exchanging for tens and fifties and fives.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a difference between, like, I think Millennium Blades does that best.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they just have bundles of money.
Sure.
But they're still ones and fives and tens.
Sure. Yeah.
I think the problem is that Power Grid doesn't have enough ones.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. Enough, like,
yeah. Ones and fives, honestly.
Yeah. Just when you're printing money, make more ones.
And if that becomes an issue, then maybe it's not the printing money part that's the problem.
Okay. Anything else?
Nope.
Okay. Well, then that will conclude our episode on Ticket to Ride. On Power Grid. Can you recommend any games that are similar to Power Grid? Well, Ticket to Ride is just a simpler version of this game where you're connecting cities across a map.
But it's not an auctioning game at all.
Yeah, it's so much more simpler.
Yeah,
is the thing. Ticket to Ride is sort of like the gateway game for Power Grid.
Right.
If you liked Ticket to Ride, then check out Power Grid. If you're interested in playing something like Power Grid but don't want to go so deep into something so complex, try Ticket to Ride.
I like Vegas Showdown as another drafting game. It's a game where you're auctioning game or bidding game. It's a game where you bid on tiles to put into a casino, but instead of having to compete with the same map, you're all on your own buildings buying the same rooms.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you liked our episode, you can follow us and leave comments on any podcasting platform. You can hit us up on social media on Facebook and Twitter at BG Bros Cast to let us know what you think. Shoot us some recommendations of games you'd like to hear us talk about, or just stay up to date with our announcements where we'll kind of tease the games that we're talking about.
Yep.
Or if you'd like, let us know if you'd rather just know what games we're planning on talking about for a week. You can check it out and get your own impression of the game before you hear ours.
Yeah, like a book club almost.
You can go to BGBcast.com and find all of our episodes there on our website where we have them all tagged. So we did an episode on Ticket to Ride. If you want to check that episode out before you get either of these games, you can find it with the Ticket to Ride tag on our website, bgbcast.com. It's also there where you can find a link to our TeePublic store, which is teepublic.com/user/bgbcast. And that's where you can buy our cool, cool merch. So that does it for BGB plugs. So let's go to Matt plugs.
I write articles/blog posts on the BGBcast website. You can find them under the episodes and articles tab. My most recent one was a article over a particularly difficult video game genre and the design of it specifically. I am currently working on another article. I don't know when it will be up yet, so I'm not going to say anything for certain yet, but there is another one in the works, I'll say. Also, I stream on twitch.tv/twack. That's twitch.tv/twak. I stream on weekdays from Central Time, 10 a.m. or 11 a.m. to about 2 p.m. or 3 p.m. Central Time. And I play a lot of action-adventure games. I speedrun a bit. I play a lot of roguelites and competitive games, mainly fighting games. Whoops. So Yeah, if you want, you can stop by, check that out. There is also a Discord server in there where you can talk to us and message us through that.
All right.
All right.
Thank you so much for listening to our plugs, and thank you so much for listening to our episode. We'll see you next week.
See ya.